Welcome to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Brought to you by LakeLink, your online fishing resource at lake-link.com.
We're also brought to you by HuntStock, an exciting new hunting festival coming to Beaver Dam, Wisconsin this summer. It'll be held at Dodge County Fairgrounds July 17th through the 19th. HuntStock feels less like a trade show and more like a deer camp. HuntStockEvents.com. And by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, Fitchburg, Green Bay, and Waupaca. They are the highest rated hearing health care clinic in Wisconsin. ProfHearingCare.com is their website. I'm Dan Small. Today we'll get a fishing report from Minnesota's Lake of the Woods. We'll talk about spring bear hunts in Ontario and Saskatchewan and learn about a new outdoor and outhouse humor book. All that and more coming up on Outdoors Radio, so stay right there. If you're ever in a motor vehicle accident, call Hupie and Abraham, named best personal injury law firm by the Wisconsin Law Journal year after year. The firm of Hupie and Abraham has collected more than $1 billion for its clients. In fact, they collect millions of dollars every month for hundreds of satisfied clients. Call the firm voted best and rated best, Hupie and Abraham, 800-800-5678, or visit hupie.com. And all 11 offices of Hupie and Abraham in Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois are open for business. Jeff Kelm joins me from home in Wisconsin Rapids this week. Well, Jeff, you were busy last weekend with a tournament on the Mississippi River. How did that go?
Yeah, so we had Masters Walleye Circuit over out of just north of Red Wing, Minnesota. We had 81 boats there. It was an impressive weekend of fishing. The amount of 10-pound plus fish wasn't like astronomical, but it was impressive to see even just a handful of fish 10 pounds or more. Saw even more 8 pounds or more. And, you know, these guys, they weeded through a lot of large fish to try to find the smaller fish they were going to need to round out their bag. On the Mississippi River in that section, pool 3-4, you're only allowed one fish over 20 inches per angler. And so, in our event, because you can weigh 5 fish, they could bring 2 of those to the stage, and the rest had to be between 15 and 20 inches. And the amount of guys that said, we couldn't find the little ones here today. We couldn't find anything smaller than 20 inches, was pretty incredible. I mean, it just shows the health really of the Mississippi River and the walleyes in that system.
Fantastic. Well, who won it?
So, winners are David Kolb and Scott Getchy, they're from out east. One's from Michigan, one's from Ohio. They're big water anglers. They got themselves up in a small little creek arm and, along with a number of other anglers. And, they ended up pulling out 24 pounds on day number one and 12 pounds plus on, day number two. They finished with the same weight as second place, but they won the tiebreaker. And the way the tiebreakers work on the Masters Walleye Circuit is most number of fish is the first one. Most number of fish alive, weight alive, is the second one. That was the same for both teams. The next one is where they got it. It comes down to biggest single day's catch and then second biggest single day's catch and then means determined by tournament director. So they got it on that biggest day's catch of 24 pounds for day one. That's what the tiebreaker was. And so, they walked away with the, well over $20,000 worth of prize money and stuff. We got a trolling motor and, it was and trophies, of course. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, with that strange, I say strange for tournament anyway, bag limit, were there a lot of weights that were similar? Were in that 20 pound range?
Yeah, so there were a lot of similar weights, but they were in about that 15 pound range because we had a lot of anglers bring in, like 2 4.5 to 6 pounders. And then your unders really varied whether you found some that were just over 15 inches or enough just under that 20 inches. There can be a lot of variable between 15 and 19, you know, and 19.9999 inches. You know, there's a lot of variable in those fish. So, it was great to see everybody caught fish, and, we had great weather for it too. And the river was, river worked with us. You never know what you're going to get on the Mississippi River. And it was awesome.
Yeah, that's for sure about the Mississippi. Well, you have another tournament next weekend. You're off this week, but where are you going next week?
Mobridge, South Dakota. We're headed out to Lake Oahe, and with the National Walleye Tour, we've got 160 boats out there for this event, and going to be a packed house, going to be some big fish. Last year for the Masters Walleye Circuit, we went out about this same time, and we had multiple 12 and 13 pound fish weighed. I anticipate the same thing here. Of course, our average weight across the board was 13 pounds for the tournament. But there were a lot of haves and have nots. You either had your really big fish or you could barely squeak by, five fish over 15 inches. So it's going to be the same way. It's going to be a big battle. You got to be able to put your big fish together with your, your slot fish and make it work.
Yeah. And that tournament, of course, is during the week because you'll be home for Memorial Weekend.
Yep. So we're not running it during Memorial Weekend in South Dakota. That Friday is considered a holiday weekend. Typically, National Walleye Tour events are run on Thursdays and Fridays. We shifted that to a Wednesday and Thursday event. So Thursday night, we're done. We're home on Friday. We get to enjoy Memorial Day weekend with family.
Yeah. And this weekend, you've got some turkey hunting planned for Robert, you and Robert?
Yeah, I think one last crack at it, because we do have family coming over for Memorial Day weekend. This is going to be our last opportunity to get out. He really wants a second bird. I want my first bird for the season. So we'll see. I got a chance to talk to one day, Dan. We met each other essentially in the, you know, middle of his path and my path crossing, and he and I talked for a while, and I thought he was going to come over, but it was one of these situations where he's out in the middle of a field and I'm in a grassy knoll, and he really didn't want to be covered at all by any of the grass or anything around me. So he was not willing to come across that point. So, we were quite interested in each other, just not quite enough.
Yeah, you know, once or twice, not very often, but a couple times I have succeeded in pulling a bird out of a field like that by just harassing the heck out of them, throwing cuts and cackles and just sounding like the meanest, nastiest, or sexiest, I don't know what they think, hen, or three or four hens. And one time, it was years ago, it was a battle of about a half hour. There were probably 2-year-olds, because the one I shot was, a 2-year-old bird, I thought. There were two birds in the field, and they gobbled every time I yelped, and I finally I broke a slate call, actually, calling them. I was hammering on it. And one of them, sure enough, walked into the woods, and I shot them. Actually, they both did, but I shot the one, so. It can happen. Well, earlier this week, my son John and I met up with friends who own land in Chippewa County and in Dunn County for a turkey hunt. And it did not go like our hunt in Bayfield County a couple of weeks ago. Wind was a big factor. Man, it just blew Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, like 20 to 30 miles an hour with gusts. And the toms were grouped up. We saw single hens all 3 days. John saw one solo tom. And I got busted twice by a group of toms on Tuesday, by sneaking around a corner, and there they were tucked into a corner of a cornfield, and the head went up, and I saw a fan. I went, oh, crap, and I was probably in range, but I backed off and did some calling. Nothing happened. Then I sneaked around the other side of the woods, tried to call them in, and got no response, and went to pick up my decoys, and I was a little careless looking or approaching the decoys, and I look to the right down the tote road, and here are three toms shoulder to shoulder in full strut about 75 yards away. And I went, oh, my God, you know. If I'd waited 5 minutes or 10 or 15, I don't know. Sometimes they take forever to close that distance. But they were trying to get my decoy to come to them. And, of course, we know they don't move. So That was my hunt.
Yeah, it's crazy how, you know, we feel outsmarted by a turkey, but they're just doing what they do.
We only have to get lucky, or they have to be careless once. They have to be careful all day, every day, mm-hmm. to live, to survive, and they're good at it.
Yeah.
Anyway, some good news on the Wisconsin fishery situation we talked about last week with Todd Berg. The state legislature's Joint Finance Committee voted 16-0 to approve the DNR funding request to keep the Brule hatchery running. And on Thursday, Todd reported to me that the Friends of Wisconsin Fisheries, that new support group he told us about on last week's show, has seen tremendous growth in support for their efforts to keep the Brule, Bayfield, and Osceola hatcheries running. And you can learn more or join the effort on Facebook at Friends of Wisconsin Fisheries. Todd also said, this is only the first step, and we've really got to keep up the pressure on the legislature, the governor, and the DNR to do the right thing and fully fund hatcheries for trout, walleyes, and muskies to keep those programs going. And stay tuned for more on that as it develops. That's all I know for now. Well, coming up, Joe Henry reports on last weekend's Minnesota walleye opener. Huntworth Pro staffer Bernie Barringer talks about spring bear hunting in Canada. And outdoor humorist Jim Mize tells us about his latest book, The Haunted Outhouse. All that and more straight ahead on Outdoors Radio.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
Here's a message from our friends at Remy Battery in Milwaukee, Waukesha, Escanaba, and Houghton. As we continue strong into almost 100 years of providing our community with high-quality batteries, we want to thank all of our customers and friends we have made over the years. We invite you to visit our newest location on Sunset Drive in Waukesha, formerly Challenger Battery. We have batteries from the largest military crafts and industrial machinery to alkalines and the smallest hearing aids. Big and small, we have them all. Stop in for a free battery and electrical check before you hit the road, trails, or the waters. Don't forget to ask our sales representatives about volume pricing. Call Remy at 414-384-0340 or visit online at remybattery.com for all your battery and battery accessory needs.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Allie Anderson, an audiologist with professional hearing care. I myself know how much fun it is to be at deer camp telling stories and playing cards. However, when you have a hearing loss, it can be very difficult and taxing on the brain long term. If you or a loved one has been experiencing hearing loss or tinnitus, give our clinic a call at 608-292-4916 or go to profhearingcare.com to book a free consultation.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappie. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Thanks for joining us on Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Lake of the Woods, Minnesota is known around the world as the walleye capital of the world. and their website is lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And joining us once again now with another fishing report from Lake of the Woods is Joe Henry. He's the executive director of Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, welcome back, and thanks for joining us again on Outdoors Radio.
Dan, it's great to be back. Thank you so much.
Well, you're quite welcome. Now, your opening weekend was last weekend, a week later than ours in Wisconsin. How did that go?
It went good. It went really well. We know there's a lot of walleyes and saugers in the lake right now. And, you know, the DNR just came out with some new reports from their fall netting and their creel surveys. And flat out, our lake is just healthy. You know, we got a lot of walleyes, a lot of big walleyes. And, of course, the sauger population is good, too. And we knew because of the sturgeon anglers on the Rainy River, the season for walleye has been closed for a while, but the sturgeon anglers accidentally are catching walleyes on their globa night crawlers they're using for sturgeons. We knew the Rainy River was loaded. And of course, we know that, you know, this time of year, just offshore in many locations, there's some nice schools of walleyes hanging around, and it's cold water. So it's a jig bite. You know, most anglers are out there either spot locked or anchored up. And they're vertical jigging with a brightly colored jig because of the stained waters of Lake of the Woods and the Rainy River. But, you know, like a gold or a, you know, gold mixed with pink or glow white or chartreuse or something. And they're putting a frozen emerald shiner on there typically. Emerald shiners, they net them in the fall. They're very delicate minnow. You can't keep them rolling. So a lot of the bait shops will freeze them. And, you know, they sell bags of frozen shiners, and that's a staple for walleyes in Lake of the Woods. So you put an emerald shiner on that jig, and you put it over the side of the boat and work it off the bottom. And I'll tell you, those walleyes and saugers are moving around, and normally things turn out really good, as we saw for the opener.
Yeah, well, that's cool. When do they spawn on Lake of the Woods?
Well, they spawn, you know, usually when the water temps, I think, around 42. So that would typically be in mid-April. It changes, though, Dan, because, you know, we have the Rainy River where they spawn. But Lake of the Woods is a big lake. If it was a Great Lake, it would be the sixth largest Great Lake. And, you know, it's got over 1 million acres of water and over 65,000 miles of shoreline. Part of that is because of the 14,552 islands. So with that being said, you know, you might catch fish in the south end of the lake that are just spawned out. But if you go up in the northern end of the lake, up by the northwest angler and that neck of the woods, they might have eggs in them yet. So it's kind of nice in a way that Mother Nature really offers that diversity so that if you have a poor spawn on one part of the lake, the other part of the lake can pick it up.
Yeah. Well, you know that I fish Lake of the Woods every year now. I go to a resort owned by Ballard's Resort, and they're on the Minnesota side of the lake, of course, but Black Island Resort is on the Canadian side, and I take a group up there every September and have now for almost a decade, and we catch walleyes all day long. It's just amazing, and it's mostly jigging, but of course, you know, in the fall, we're casting crankbaits and trolling a little bit too, and we go with guides because you mentioned the size of the lake. It would be like going to, well, let's go to Lake Erie and see where we can fish. I mean, you got to know what you're doing, especially with all those islands and shoals and everything. So for somebody who's never fished there, what's your advice?
We certainly welcome, you know, anglers to bring their own boats up. And, you know, with the map chips and stuff now and help from a resort or a bait shop, you'll normally get out some good fish. It might take you a while. Once you find them, you'll be on them. But I'll tell you, you want an easy way to do it? You know, the south end of the lake, there's a great big basin, it's big open water, almost like a great lake, loaded with big walleyes, a lot of walleyes. Jump on a charter boat. It's just so easy. You know, you wake up in the morning at a nice resort, you have a nice breakfast, at about 8 o'clock in the morning, you board a charter boat. A licensed charter captain's running that boat. They're dialed in with other captains, and they know what the fish movements are. They're going to put you on walleyes. You're going to catch your fish. You're going to have a great day, nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about the weather. You don't have to worry about navigation or where the fish are. What you got to worry about is having a good time, catching their fish, and making some memories. You know, when you go to the north end of the lake, they don't use charter boats because it's all the islands. They use more of the 20-foot pro walleye boat, and that's a little bit more of an intimate experience as well, where you'll jump in with, you know, two or three of you, whatever, and jump in with a guide, and they'll take you amongst the 14,000 island and probably even make you a good fresh shore lunch. So you don't have to trailer a boat. It's easy, especially the first couple times you come to get a lay of the land. I'd really highly recommend it. One thing you'll see too, Dan, is, you know, Lake of the Woods isn't this Taj Mahal kind of area where the prices are jacked. I mean, our rates are very reasonable compared to the Midwest.
Yeah, and that's the case with Ballard's where I go. We have filled up the last couple of years, and I'm full with 22 guests this year. And everybody's amazed once they've been there at how good the fishing is. And even before they go, they say, well, how can they do this for this price? Because you got lodging, you got your meals, you got guides and the boat and the bait. Bring rods if you want, but you don't have to. It's a wonderful way to fish for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Ballard's does a great job, and Ballard's is one resort out of over 65 lodging facilities around our lake. And there's other resorts, there's Airbnbs, there's hotels, there's villas. I mean, we have such a nice variety of lodging around our lake, and it just makes it nice.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned sturgeon. I understand that there was a record sturgeon caught.
There was, yeah. You know, we knew that there were state record sturgeon in the Rainy River, and, you know, people had caught them before, but maybe they didn't know how to register a catch and release record with the DNR. We have to measure the length and measure the girth and have a witness and all that jazz. So, you know, a lot of times they didn't get registered, but finally we had somebody that was fishing and they caught a 80-inch sturgeon with like a 34-inch girth. The estimated weight on it is over 165 pounds. So really a big, big fish, and it was just confirmed this last week as a state record catch and release sturgeon. So a big sturgeon, and I can guarantee you there's bigger ones in there. But, you know, we talked about our sturgeon fishing, I think, last time we spoke, and there's so many sturgeon. The DNR estimates that in Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, there's over 100,000 sturgeon, over 40 inches long. So it's, you know, if you like catching big fish, they're way bigger than the muskies and a lot easier to catch. A lot of our muskie anglers, you know, before they get out muskie hunting later in June, you know, they'll fish for a sturgeon just because a lot of them are into big fish, and really adds to it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Joe, we got to wrap this up, but I really appreciate your joining us and your sponsorship and your support of the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers, which is how we connected this time, although we've known each other for years. And I hope to have you on again sometime.
You know, Dan, that sounds great. I appreciate your support of Aglow as well, and wish all my friends in Wisconsin good fishing.
Thank you, Joe. And tell us your website. How can people get information on all this great fishing and lodging that we talked about?
You bet. Lake of the Woods, MN for Minnesota. Lake of the Woods, MN.com.
All right. Joe, we'll see you in Niagara Falls in the fall, if not before.
That sounds perfect, Dan. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Folks, Joe Henry is the executive director of Lake of the Woods Tourism. And as he mentioned, their website is lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Check it out. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
You're listening to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small. Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Written humor, like stand-up comedy, takes talent, timing, delivery, and most importantly, stories, scenarios, and believable, or maybe unbelievable, situations. And joining me now is an outdoor writer who has mastered the funny story. His name is Jim Mize. He hails from somewhere in South Carolina. We'll find out where. He has been compared to the legendary Pat McManus, who wrote the humor column for Outdoor Life and even Field and Stream back in the print days. Jim has written dozens, I don't know, maybe hundreds of funny stories and several books of humor, some of which have won awards from outdoor writers' organizations. A couple of his books you may have heard of, A Creek Trickles Through It and The Winter of Our Discount Tent. And his latest book, The Haunted Outhouse, is now available from his website, which is acreektricklesthroughit.com. If you want an autographed copy, that's where to get it. It's also available on Amazon as an ebook and as an actual hard copy. And I have a soft cover hard copy right here. That's kind of a oxymoron, isn't it, Jim? A soft covered hard copy.
You're well on your way to writing humor.
Yeah, well, I do that kind of unintentionally sometimes. The things that we get into often end up kind of humorous.
That's right.
So where in South Carolina are you? Somewhere in the mountains, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I got a little cabin up here in the mountains, and I'm landlocked between a wilderness area and a state park. So I've got bears and coyotes and all the various critters wandering through by day and night.
Well, that's a nice place to be landlocked and stuck. I'm sure it's beautiful there.
Oh, it's gorgeous, especially this time of year.
Yeah. My brother lives in North Carolina near Flat Rock, but he's originally, like me, from Western New York, and he just migrated south when the winters got too much for him in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, we're only 30 miles apart.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm real close to the North Carolina line.
Okay, well, cool. Your humor has been compared to that of Pat McManus, and that's some pretty high praise indeed. And in fact, he mentored you many years ago. How did that happen?
We were at an outdoor writers conference in Kalispell, Montana, and I was on a little shuttle bus to one of our events and looked back and saw him in the seat across the aisle and struck up a conversation. And he asked me what kind of writing I did, and I said, I'm trying to learn to write humor. And he basically said, that's my kind of guy, and we started talking. And by the time we'd gotten off the bus, he had offered to critique one of my early stories. And he followed it up with a letter talking about some of the things he tried to do writing humor. I read everything he wrote, trying to understand how he did it. He even wrote a book, Deer on a Bicycle, where he talks about his humor technique. I learned a lot from him in terms of how to write a humorous fictional story.
Mm-hmm. And you've done it well. Now, you created a cast of characters as well, namely Beanpole and his family, and you insert yourself as the narrator of these stories, and in fact, as, I don't know, Beanpole's best friend or his sidekick?
Yeah, actually, I'm the only real person in the book. The others are fictional, and in the last book, I included my dog. So he and I are the only two in there that actually exist. But I've been writing about these characters for 40 years, so I feel like I know them.
I guess. Well, you know them because you invented them.
Yeah, that's true.
So where do you get your ideas?
You know, it's one of those things where I learned something from Hemingway, and I think it was A Movable Feast. He talked about how he used people he knew as characters, but I read that he got into trouble because he didn't always put them in a favorable light and got into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided not to do that I would invent the people, but take things that actually happened to somebody and then let it happen to one of my characters. And, of course, it often goes in a different direction. But anytime I see something that just strikes me as funny, I'll ask myself, what if that happened to Beanpole or happened to Grumpy or one of the guys in the diner?
Uh-huh.
And the stories usually go from there.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jim, your stories depict mishaps or things that most of us either have seen or maybe had happened to us. We fell out of a boat or it's something that could have happened. Did most of these things happen to you?
The majority of them happened to me or one of my friends.
Uh-huh.
There's a story in there about the disappearing rattlesnake, and that happened to one of my outdoor rider buddies in a slightly different way. But everything from skinny dippers you run up on to ghost stories about places you hunt, those are all good fodder for humor.
Yeah, for sure. Besides a good laugh, what do you think the appeal of this kind of writing, your stories in particular, is to readers?
You know, I try to make people enjoy what they read. You know, that's my goal when I sit down to write something. I like for the reader to feel something about what they just read. Humor lets people escape. It releases tension. They have a good time. They'll be reading along and say, yeah, that happened to me. That's really my goal. You know, I hope that when they get to the end of the book, they kind of laugh and look for the next one.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of humor just as a way to kind of release the tensions of the day.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's your goal, I would assume here. These are not deep philosophical stories or great lessons, although there are some lessons in how to or how not to get along in the outdoors. But your comic relief, I guess, is what I would say. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. You know, the outdoor literature has really evolved into a lot of how to do something and where to go do it kinds of things.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of stuff I think that's starting to slip away from us. And I'm trying to keep it out there.
Yeah. Well, you certainly are. Now, the characters are made up, but based on some people you know. How about the diner? Is that a place in your hometown that you go to or hang out in?
No, I wish I had a diner like that. I have had places where I would go and sit and have a cup of coffee and watch people around the coffee shop. And a lot of small towns have these places where the farmers will get together first thing in the morning and after the animals are fed and have a cup of coffee and talk crop prices and all that. And that's the kind of place I tried to create in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son and I discovered such a place last year. We were fishing up in northern Wisconsin, which has a lot of small towns like the Carolinas or like any rural area of any state, probably. And we went into this little diner for breakfast, and there was one gentleman there about our age, because you and I are about the same vintage. And, you know, he looks over at us, and he gives us that, you're not from here look, not in a nasty way, but just like, okay, who are you? So he starts talking to us, and we got his whole, you know, good part of his life story. And after he left, the waitress, who was all of 15, maybe, she was probably the daughter of the owner, I asked her, who is that guy? And she said, oh, he comes in here every day, and he has breakfast, and his lunch is the same thing, and it's a slice of pie and ice cream. That's his lunch. I'm sure he's a wealth of stories if somebody were to sit down with him and mine that mother load, so to speak.
I do listen for people that tell stories like that. Sometimes I'll get a nugget out of there that I'll record in my idea book, and I keep a journal for ideas, and sooner or later I'll come back to it and say, you know, that would evolve into a story if I let it. So
yeah,
it's a great place to do that.
Yeah. Well, the title story, The Haunted Outhouse, and I won't give the whole thing away, but your two characters who are kind of like Shakespeare's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, or maybe that's an unfair comparison to you or to Shakespeare, I don't know. But those two guys in the diner go out and they play a trick on Beanpole. Did that really happen?
No. Where that story came from is probably almost 50 years ago. I was working with a guy that told me the story about having to move an outhouse.
Uh-huh.
And he borrowed a mule to do it, and he pulled the outhouse off the hole to the new one. But when he unlatched the mule, it backed into the old hole.
Okay.
And so he had to go borrow another mule from the same farmer to pull the first mule out. And I just thought, you know, that episode lends itself to a prank gone wrong.
Absolutely.
That's one thing that has evolved. If you go back and read some of my earlier Beanpole stories, he used to fall for a lot of those pranks. And he's a pretty intelligent character. And over the years, he's learned to expect them from those two characters in the diner.
Yeah. And you have an epilogue conversation with Beanpole, which is interesting because obviously you created Beanpole, but you have this fictional conversation where you ask him how he got into all that kind of trouble, and he says, well, you created most of it, or you wrote it, so you ought to know that kind of stuff. Well, we won't give away how the outhouse story turns out, but before I let you go, my take on humor, I guess what makes me laugh more than anything is surprise endings. And you have a few of those. The outhouse story is one of them. And what other one comes to mind there? The giant spider. That was just hilarious. And I found myself laughing out loud at the ending of that story. The rest of it, I'm just kind of following along. Yeah, okay, okay, yeah. It's a chuckle here, chuckle there, and then a loud belly laugh at the end.
You hit on something there that I think is critical to good humor, and that's surprise.
Uh-huh.
If your story telegraphs the ending, it's kind of a ho-hum moment. But
yeah.
I do like for my stories to kind of evolve in a way that's not obvious.
Yep. Yeah, it's the I didn't see that coming, but it sure was funny kind of situation.
Yep.
Well, Jim, I got to let you go here, but I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule writing funny stories and chasing bears in the South Carolina mountains to spend some time with us on Outdoors Radio.
I appreciate it.
And your book is available from Amazon. Again, the author's name, Jim Mize, M-I-Z-E, and you can get it also from his website. If you want an autographed copy, acreektricklesthroughit.com is his website, and the title of the book, once again, The Haunted Outhouse. Jim, we'll look forward to seeing you at a conference or maybe talking again when you put out another book.
I look forward to it. Thanks.
You're quite welcome. Jim Mize, folks, the author of The Haunted Outhouse, acreektricklesthroughit.com is where you can get your copy. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Here's a way to give back to the future of waterfowl. Volunteer with Ducks Unlimited. From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring critical habitat for nearly 90 years. We're working toward our next million-acre milestone, and we need your help. Whether you're great at selling event tickets, securing donations, lining up sponsors, or pitching in wherever, there's a role for everyone. Join the team that's making a real difference. Head to ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
If you want to catch a big walleye, go where the big walleyes are. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. With a variety of resorts and lodging facilities offering full-service fishing. Lake of the Woods is also home to sturgeon, sauger, perch, trophy pike, muskie, smallmouth bass, burbot, and more. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods today. Go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hunt Stock is bringing energy, excitement, and attendee experience back to sportsman shows. Legendary seminar lineups and meet and greets from the hunting public. Lanny Benoit, Dan Infall, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Moles, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. $40,000 in giveaways, including bows, guns, optics, hunting trips, stands, saddles, and more. You won't find window salesmen here, just hunting exhibitors like Vortex, Sig Sauer, and Tacticam, to name a few. Bring your bows for the 3D archery range and novelty shoots and unwind with live music and after parties and campsites available right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code radio at checkout to save 10%. Huntstock feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information, Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Thanks for joining us on Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Here in Wisconsin, and in fact throughout most of the U.S., spring hunting means turkey hunting. But spring bear hunting is legal in a few states and in parts of Canada. And joining me now from Brainerd, Minnesota, to talk about bear hunting is a regular voice on our show, outdoor writer, Huntworth Gear pro staffer, and bear hunting guide, Bernie Berenger. His website is blackbearshow.com, and you can watch his videos on YouTube at Bow Hunting Road. Bernie, thanks for joining us, and welcome back to Outdoors Radio.
My pleasure. I'm always excited to talk about bears.
I guess you are, and you're going to be up to your ears in bears pretty soon. You're hunting in Ontario this week, I think, right?
I'm heading up, yeah, for next week, and then I'm going to go to Saskatchewan in June, way up in northern Saskatchewan. It's a fly-in hunt, So I'm pretty excited about that, too.
Cool. Now, how does spring bear hunting differ from fall bear hunting?
Well, spring bear hunting, a couple of interesting things about it. Number one is that the days are so much longer. You just don't have nocturnal bears very much because you could be sitting on a stand till 9:30 or 10 o'clock. When I'm in northern Saskatchewan in middle of June, the days are so long up there. There's only about 2 hours of darkness. So, you know, you just kind of go out and sit whenever you want and hope the bears come. They can come any time of the day or night. There's no nocturnal bears because there's no nighttime, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the things about it. The other thing is that there isn't a lot of competition for natural foods in the spring like there is in the fall. You know, in the fall, you're competing with berries and hazelnuts and acorns and beech nuts and all that kind of thing. Well, there just isn't a lot for them to eat in the spring. So they tend to come to the baits a lot better and more consistently. And the bigger mature males, they're hunting for females, you know, the end of May and early June, that's the beginning of the rut. So, you know, you could be sitting in a tree stand and have a big old male just roll through any moment and he might not even stop and eat. He just kind of scent check in the area. I love spring hunting just because the weather's nice and you're just going to see a lot of bears, especially in Canada.
Yeah. Do you use different bait in spring?
Not too much, really. You can kind of get away with a lot of different baits where in the fall, boy, you just can't make a mistake. You know, you got to use really high quality baits like trail mix and things like that. Sweet or better in the fall. In the spring in Ontario, we're baiting with corn and just putting in a barrel and dumping a couple gallons of fryer oil over it. And that works pretty well. It's a lot cheaper than trail mix too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really get away with corn in the fall because there's so much better food available to them. But in the spring, it sure works.
Okay. Well, we wish you luck on those hunts. And then you're going to be talking at an expo, a new expo here in Wisconsin in July. And then your own expo, your International Black Bear Show, comes up in July too.
Yeah, I'm excited about both of them. You know, the Huntstock event in Beaver Dam is really cool that it's coming to the Midwest. I believe this is kind of the future of sports shows where it's like an outdoor show and people just kind of get together and there's a lot of outdoor events and things like that. It's pretty cool. I'm going to be giving bear hunting seminars every day and I have a booth there that I'll set up. I've got a line of bear hunting clothing, bear hunting themed t-shirts that I'll be selling and doing seminars. And that's the middle of July. And then the end of July, July 31st through August 2nd is the International Black Bear Expo, which is in Grand Rapids, Minnesota this year. And that's a show for bear hunters. And last year was the first year. It's growing so much right now. We got more than twice as many vendors. We got taxidermists and outfitters and people selling just about everything you can think of related to bear hunting and even local maple syrup and things, just everything you can think of that would be at a show that appeals to people that are interested in the outdoors. And we got a lot of good seminars at that. Tom Miranda is going to be there on Saturday, and that's a really fun event. If you have any interest in bear hunting at all, it's definitely worth going to.
And of course, all the information on that is on your website, blackbearshow.com, right?
Right.
Why do you think there's such a great interest in bears now? You have a video on your YouTube channel on Bow Hunting Road where you talk about the explosion in the interest in bear hunting. What do you attribute it to?
Yeah, the interest in bear hunting is just really growing. And there's several factors I think that you can attribute it to. Number one is bear populations are very high all across North America right now, and they're expanding into new areas. They just started a new bear season in Missouri and Florida. New Jersey got a bear season. You know, there's bear seasons in places like Oklahoma now. And, you know, bear populations are just expanding. So that's one of the reasons for it. There's just a lot more opportunities. You know, the other thing is a lot of people have kind of matured as deer hunters. Most people kind of start out, especially bow hunters, they hunt deer. And then after, you know, a few years, they're like, I want to try something else. And the black bear is the number two big game animal that people go after. And if you look at the history of how bow hunting has grown over the last 25 years or so, there's just a lot of people that have kind of got to that point where they want to try something new. So the interest in bear hunting is really growing. And another thing is, a lot of guided hunts have just got ridiculous in price, and bear hunts have remained pretty reasonable. You know, you can go on a bear hunt in the U.S. for $3,000, and a Canadian bear hunt, even the really high-end one, they're about $5,000. Well, I mean, if you want to go on an elk hunt or a moose hunt, you're looking at $10,000 to $20,000. A sheep hunt's $40,000-$50,000 nowadays. So there's people with disposable income, and they're just like, I can spend $5,000 on a bear hunt in Canada. The good Canadian outfitters are just booking up years in advance right now. I'm finding that in Minnesota too, where, you know, I guide in northeastern Minnesota and I'm completely booked for 26 and 27. I think I got maybe two spots left for 2028, and I got deposits in for 29 and 2030.
Oh my God.
So people are applying for points and they just can't wait to draw that tag and go bear hunting.
Yeah, and you anticipate you'll still be guiding then, huh?
Well, I'm not taking deposits past 2030 right now, okay. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking before we started recording. How much longer are guys of our generation going to keep doing this stuff? But here we are.
Well, you know, if you love doing it and you can continue to do it, why retire? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, me too. Well, who is your main client as a bear hunter? Are they young people, older people? Who is it?
They tend to be 40s at least. I have a few younger people, and some people like to bring their kids. I had a 14-year-old girl shot a giant bear 2 years ago, but a lot of people are retired. I'd say half of them are retirement age, and the rest of them are in that 40 to 50 range. It's kind of all over the map, but you don't get too many people in their 20s and 30s. You know, they're raising families, and it's a little harder to get away and spend the money on something like that. But, boy, there seems to be an unlimited number of people that want to hunt. You know, about half my clients are from inside of Minnesota, and the rest of them are anywhere from Pennsylvania and Illinois, Wisconsin. It takes 9-10 years to draw a tag in the best zones in Wisconsin now, so a lot of people are coming to Minnesota because they can draw in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be a busy guy, as always. I appreciate you taking a little time out of your schedule to talk with us before you head north to Ontario. You wear that Huntworth gear in the spring for bear hunting?
Oh, absolutely. I love their tarnin pattern. It's got some green in it, and it really works really effectively in the spring. And the other thing is I love their layering system where, you know, you can buy a couple pairs of pants. One is a little more insulated maybe for a cool evening or something, but you can buy really good quality clothing for a lot less money. You know, I priced out 6 pieces of Huntworth versus 6 pieces of Kuyu or Sitka. Kuyu and Sitka, if you want to buy a layering system, it's the same as the cost of a used car.
Oh.
You know, the Huntworth is really good quality clothing for the weekend warrior's budget. That's the way I like to put it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've been wearing their stuff turkey hunting this spring, and we've had a couple of mornings, even well into the season, where we had frost and snow on one of our hunts, and I was wearing the heat boost jacket because it was cold.
Yeah, I love that stuff for late season hunting especially, but any early morning hunt, it'll really keep you warm.
For sure. Well, Bernie, we're going to let you go. Drive safely to Canada and hope you get your bears, and we will be in touch. We'll talk again.
Sounds good, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome, folks. Bernie Barringer is going to be a busy guy this spring and summer, but you can catch him online at blackbearshow.com. You'll learn all about the International Black Bear Show that he runs, and that's in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, July 31st through August 2nd. And, of course, before that, he will be at Huntstock in Beaver Dam. That's the 17th through the 19th of July. I'll be there, too, so you can catch both of us at that expo, and I hope you do. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
Hi, my name is Dr. Allie Anderson, an audiologist with professional hearing care. I myself know how much fun it is to be at deer camp, telling stories, and playing cards. However, when you have a hearing loss, it can be very difficult and taxing on the brain long term. If you or a loved one has been experiencing hearing loss or tinnitus, give our clinic a call at 608-292-4916 or go to profhearingcare.com to book a free consultation.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Jeff Kelm. We're brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales on Highway 33 West in West Bend, on the web at cedarlakesales.com, by Crestliner Boats at crestliner.com, and by Mercury Marine at mercurymarine.com. They've got showrooms full of new boats and pontoons. Get details online at cedarlakesales.com. We're also brought to you by Huntstock, an exciting new hunting festival coming to Beaver Dam, Wisconsin this summer at Dodge County Fairgrounds, July 17th through the 19th. Huntstock feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp. And by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, Fitchburg, Green Bay, and now Wapaka, profhearingcare.com.
And if our TV show Outdoor Wisconsin is not on the air where you live, you can always catch past episodes at milwaukeepbs.org. And my Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV special is archived on YouTube at Deer Hunt Wisconsin.
And the radio show that you hear online, or hear now, is online all the time. Lake-link.com. Go to the Outdoor Radio page and you can download it there. Or you go to outdoornews.com/podcasts and you can pick it up there. Dan's on social media as Dan Small Outdoors. You can find me at Hardwater Jeff.
And remember, you can save money on a couple of nifty items. You can save 10% on any turkey call order at foreplayturkeycall.com. Use the promo code SMALL10 at checkout. foreplayturkeycall.com, promo code SMALL10. And for Fingerlight, you can save 15% on any order at fingerlight.com. The promo code there is DanSmall15. We had a little rain in southwest Wisconsin on Thursday night, not much, enough to settle the dust. But up north, it's still dangerously dry, and the fire danger as of this recording on Friday morning was high. Please avoid burning anything outside. Most wildfires, you know, start by somebody burning trash. Be careful with fire. The woods or grassland you burn, maybe your own, or mine, or Jeff's, who knows. Lost in the Woods Improv, probably Wisconsin's northernmost improv ensemble, is performing every Friday this month in Bayfield or Washburn. Find details on Facebook at Lost in the Woods Improv. Our theme music is by Warren Nelson. His next gig is Wednesday, June 17th at the Bayfield Maritime Museum in Bayfield. The show starts at 5:30 p.m. And for more on Warren and his music, visit warrennelson.com. I'm Dan Small here with Jeff Kelm. Jeff, I hope you and Robert at least get to talk to one and maybe put one on the ground this weekend.
Yeah, me too, Dan. Thank you.
You bet. And folks, get outside this weekend. Be sure to join us again next week for Outdoors Radio.